By the time you get to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, the Apostle Paul is deep into a larger discussion that started back in chapter 8 when the Corinthian Christians had asked him whether it was acceptable to eat meat sacrificed to idols as well as whether it was acceptable to eat that meat in the temples of idols. And in particular, when it came to eating idol meat in the idol's temple, Paul's basic answer was no. But his reasoning why goes on for a couple of chapters. It's late in that discussion when we come to chapter 10, as Paul begins to understand ultimately why the answer is no, even though all meat belongs to God, and it's just meat, and we know that there are no gods as such behind the idols, it's still unacceptable for a Christian to eat at an idol's table, at an idol's temple. And so he begins to summarize his point in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 14. Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. I speak as to sensible people. Judge for yourselves what I say. The cup of blessing that we bless, is it not a participation in the blood of Christ? The bread that we break, is it not a participation in the body of Christ? Because there is one bread, we who are many are one body, for we all partake of the one bread. Consider the people of Israel. Are not those who eat the sacrifices participants in the altar? And there he refers, of course, to the Jewish priests at the temple, at the Jewish temple's altar. And the priests would eat of those sacrifices that were offered to God in worship. And of course, what it means is they were sharing, they were participating in the worship of God and the reality behind the altar at that temple. What do I imply then, he asks, verse 19? That food offered to idols is anything, or that an idol is in fact anything? No. I imply that what pagan sacrifice they offered to demons and not to God. There are no other gods, Paul says, but there are demons. There is Satan. And when you participate in the world's ways and the things the world worships and values, you participate in what is demonic and not to God. I do not want you, he goes on to add, to be participants with demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord. And here, as earlier, he's talking about the Lord's Supper. He's talking about the bread that we're about to break. He's talking about the cup we're about to drink. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the table of the Lord and the table of demons. Shall we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than he? And thus, Paul gives basically his implied answer. No, Christians have no business participating in the worldly things, worldly values, worldly worship, because ultimately we cannot partake of two tables. The idea of the table of God and sharing with God as you eat the things of God, it's really an old one. Paul has already, of course, alluded to Jewish worship in the Jewish temple. When you go back to Deuteronomy chapter 14, it wasn't just the priests who were partaking at the table of the Lord, so to speak, as they ate of the sacrifices they offered on the altar of God in the Jerusalem temple. It was actually others, average Jews as well, who came to the temple offering their tithes. Deuteronomy 14, verse 22, you shall take of the tithe all the yield of your seed as it comes from the field year by year. And before the Lord your God, in the place that he will choose to make his name dwell there, in other words, the Jerusalem temple, you will eat the tithe of your grain, of your wine, and of your oil, and the firstborn of your herd and flock, that you may learn to fear the Lord always. And later on, he goes on to further elaborate on this in verse 26. You shall eat there before the Lord your God. Rejoice, you and your household. In other words, part of worshiping God is always to eat at the Lord's table, to share in the things that we offer to God that God shares back to us. Ultimately, the fact is the world is the Lord, or the world is the Lord's in the fullness thereof. And so we always, in a sense, share in God's good things. Isaiah 55, Isaiah recognizing the reality that we eat and share in the Lord's good things. And it's not just a physical thing. It ultimately becomes a spiritual reality. It says in Isaiah 55 and verse 1, come, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. He who has no money, come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money in the world for that which is not bread? and you labor for that which does not satisfy. Listen diligently to me. Eat what is good, and delight yourselves in rich food. Incline your ear, come to me. Hear, that your soul may live. And so there again in Isaiah 55, God's calling the people to his table, to a place where you don't need money to eat. Wouldn't that be nice in the world, in life? You come to a place where God freely offers you that which truly satisfies. God calls you to his table. Just as the Jews were literally to eat before him at the Jerusalem temple, God calls us spiritually to eat before him, to share in his good things, to feed upon his word as he talks about it later in Isaiah 55, to feed upon his teaching, ultimately to feed upon himself and to truly be satisfied. And so we come back to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, where again, Paul, with all of this sitting underneath his thinking and what he's teaching the Corinthian Christians as they come to the Lord's table and their congregation. And by the way, all of this forms the larger context to the much more familiar passage in chapter 11, a much more familiar reading about the Lord's Supper that many of us are much more familiar with. This all comes before that, where he reminds them that if you're going to truly and rightly eat at the Lord's table, to participate, to use Paul's language, to participate in the body and blood of Christ, we have to come rightly separated from the world. We can't eat at two tables, even though we're tempted to do so. And so as we come to the table, we need to hear Paul's words about the reality of this place and this moment. What does Paul mean in 1 Corinthians 10 when he says, well, we stir the Lord to jealousy? Well, what he means is exactly what Deuteronomy 32 was talking about. We're there at the end of the book of Deuteronomy. Moses, and what we often now call the Song of Moses, reminding Israel of her spiritual weakness and failures and the Lord's grace to them in their weakness and failures, reminds the second generation of Jews who are about to go into the land what the first generation's failure was. Verse 16 of Deuteronomy 32, they stirred God to jealousy with strange gods. With abominations, they provoked him to anger. They sacrificed to demons that were no gods. That's where Paul gets his understanding of what he just said in chapter 10, that there are no other gods, but you do sacrifice to demons. When you participate in worldly things, you are actually worshiping and sharing with the demons who are in rebellion to God. We don't usually think about it that way, but that's the truth. Deuteronomy and 1 Corinthians say it. It's so. They sacrificed to demons that were no gods, to gods they had never known, to new gods that had come recently, whom your fathers had never dreaded and truly feared. And so as we come to this table and we listen to Paul's words about the reality of this place in this moment, we need to rightly reckon with whether we are eating from this table alone, or whether in our day-to-day lives we were actually sharing in the table of demons as well, and therefore really truly have no right to eat of this table. This time at the table is a test of fellowship, participation. This table either bonds us with God, and then bonding us with God bonds us with each other, or else it highlights our hypocrisy, the reality that in our lives outside this place, we actually participate with the various idolatries of the age that surround us. Yes, we may no longer go to literal temples and eat literal meat. We may no longer be tempted to go to temples filled with graven images. But the essence of idolatry is whatever we love and desire most in our hearts, and thus what we truly organize our lives around and pursue when options must be chosen and opportunities must be foregone. The idols of this age test us day and tempt us day by day. Materialism, pleasure, security, all ultimately found in the fear of man above the fear of God. We go to these metaphorical temples. We share in those metaphorical meals of those other idols, because either we maybe truly believe and we're just being a hypocrite here, or maybe like the Christians of 1 Corinthians, because we want to be socially acceptable at work, at school, in our larger extended families. We don't want to be the ones that say, no, we're not going to participate in the idolatries of the world and the idolatries of those all around us. And so maybe we have been eating and drinking at the table of demons. And now we come to gather at the table of the Lord. As we eat and drink this morning, let us heed carefully Paul's words. Let us examine ourselves. Let us make sure that the fellowship of this table is pure and that we are truly and only joined to the Lord and thus to each other, lest we provoke the Lord to jealousy by sharing at his table, even as we eat from others.